buy a multi-unit with your W-2 immediately and live in one of the units. And then if you move away, you can put other nurses or nursing students in that same place.
Welcome to the Investing RN podcast, your number one resource for nurses and healthcare professionals who want to take control of their financial well-being and build a life of abundance and freedom. Hosted by Josh Condado and Colin Davis.
Each week, we bring you insightful interviews with successful nurses, entrepreneurs, and experts in the field. Together, we'll explore the world of investing, uncover strategies to overcome challenges, and inspire you to create a thriving portfolio.
Whether you're a new nurse, just starting out, or a seasoned veteran, Investing RN is here to equip you with the knowledge, tools, and inspiration you need to invest your time, money, and relationships wisely. Welcome to another episode of the Investing RN. Today we have Dr. Aisha Allen, a fellow CRNA nurse, and then she's doing a lot of cool stuff in real estate. We're going to talk all about it. Just found out she's job optional, and that's everybody's dream. So we're going to talk to her about how she did that and how we can all accomplish the same. Thank you, Dr. Aisha, for showing up today.
Thank you for having me.
So we usually start this out by just talking about your journey. What led you to even try any field in the hospital? You chose nursing, then CRNA. So talk about the very beginnings.
Yeah. Okay. So the year was 1991 when I was born. I'm just kidding.
Was that year of the tiger?
I don't know. I'm not that good of a woo-woo. Like, I'm supposed to be good at woo-woo, but I'm not. I'm working on it. I'll figure it out. I'll get back to you.
Yeah, right.
So I graduated high school in 2009, went to school for like mass comm. I loved advertising, still do. And then started looking at a few of my friends in 2008, who graduated in 2008 and were graduating from college, and they were struggling trying to find jobs. For those, you can look up what happened in 2008 if you don't know. And I was like, okay, I want to find a secure job. I was in athletic, what's it called? I did like athletic training also. And I was like, okay, let me do something medical that'll always be in demand. And I found nursing. It was winter break. I had just finished my first like college. I was a college athlete, my first season. And I was sitting in bed on winter break and I was just like Googling away. I'm like, okay, let me apply to nursing school. And it was like 2 days before the deadline. And I started looking up like the salaries, and you know, I'm gonna keep it real. I was like, that, I don't know how much I'm going to be able to make on that. Just my young, like young mind. And so I was like, well, what can I do in grad school after that? And I found nursing anesthesia. And I was like, okay, well, that's what I'm going to do. And so I just applied for nursing school. I knew that I had spent some time in the hospital. I've had surgeries, two ACL surgeries. And so I had this like combination of me being able to care for people and then being able to make money to and put it together. And I was like, okay, I'll just do nursing. And so that's how I got into the field itself.
This episode is sponsored by Allday Investments. If you would like to get your start in real estate investing, but don't want to deal with toilets or tenants, we have several new opportunities that might interest you. Head over to alldayinvestments.co/invest or follow the link in our show notes to book a call with our team. So everybody that we've had a few CRNAs on here, and all of them knew somebody that was a CRNA so far. I think you're the first person that found it on Google. So Google is still, it still works, I guess. Cool. So when you graduated nursing school and you obviously went to the ICU, did you get straight into the ICU, or what was kind of your plan? Cause you clearly knew exactly where you're going and how to get there.
Yeah. So I wanted to get into the ICU immediately, but I was kind of running into roadblocks, didn't find any new graduate positions. And so I figured I'll take the first nursing job that I had that was available to me. And I had been like messaging recruiters, doing the whole thing, didn't hear back. And so I said, let me take the first job I can get. It was an ICU step down, vascular ICU step down at Sotera Norfolk General. Took that job. And then at the whole time I was still looking for ICU positions. And at 6 months, this is me like getting off night shift, going to manager's offices the next day. Like, I was super hungry, and I'd like, they, and you know, now managers aren't there at 7 a.m. Like, so I would be like, oh man, they're not in their office. And so I finally called found the number to the recruiting office and called their phone, left tons of messages, found their office. And I was like, do you have any ICU positions? And they're like, actually, yeah. And that's how I got my first interview, my first and only ICU interview. And he was this, his name was Al, I'll never forget him. He gave me a chance. And that's how I got my IC position, cardiac surgery.
That's a good way to do it. I was going to say, I kind of did something similar, like weaseling my way into the ER, I always say, because I was like there for this computer thing. And then I just like got into it for my bachelor's. I got linked up with the ER educator. So it's like, yeah, kind of like, you know, as we'll get with the real estate, it's like you just find a way. You also did military for a little bit. At what point in your journey was that?
That was the start of the nurse anesthesia journey. I was figuring out a way to pay for it. Regardless, I was going to do it, whether I take out loans and pay it back, just ROIs there. As you are well aware, you do the numbers and it's like, okay, I can graduate, make this amount of money, pay it back, and we're good. But I was a little intimidated with that number at 20, whatever I was, 23. So I did what's called the HPSP program, Health Profession Scholarship, specifically for the Air Force. And so you apply ahead of time. You'd want to do your packet ahead of time, you know, get your medical records, your waivers, all that stuff, find a recruiter. And then once you are accepted into anesthesia school, you can submit your packet, all this military speak. And the year I think I was selected, it was one or two people that were selected for the scholarship. And so when you get that scholarship, they pay for your tuition up front, and then you owe them back active duty time, year for year repayment. So minimum of 3 years. A lot of stuff, shenanigans happen. Military is such an ancient system. Someone lost my paperwork and I didn't get my first year of school covered. So the most expensive year, $100K at Duke University, was not covered. And so I still had to do my 3 years of service, but it was worth it. I had great experience, got to travel to Japan, lived there for 2 years, and just got back a year ago.
That's great. I mean, it sounds great. It sounds like you are happy with your choice.
I'm happy with my choice, but I'm also just that type of person. But it was rough.
Yeah, I bet. Well, so I'm so surprised that the government did something that was not expected. Like, this is just news to me. I've never heard of that before.
So off-brand. You guys are funny.
Do you have any experience in the military that stand out that set you up for how well you're doing today? Because, I mean, we'll get into the real estate and all that. Great. But yeah, any experiences in the military, travels?
Well, basically, you have to be, your life is not your own. So it's also like anesthesia school prepared me for that part. But yes, I was there to be a CRNA, but technically, like, you're owned by the military and everything is filtered through the needs of the Air Force. So if they told me to go and mop floors, technically that is what I would have to go do. And I worked back-to-back 24-hour shifts in Japan. There was no like workers' comp and like you're overworked. They don't care. You need to man your MTF or medical facility, essentially. And so then they'll send people off to training. So you'll have five people that you work with along with other anesthesiologists. And then they send three people. One's deployed, one's sent to go do some training, one's sent to go help another base out, and then there's two of you left. And the two of you still need to man the hospital, do surgeries, take call. And so that it was my experience in Japan, where I was just working nonstop, had toxic leadership. But it prepared me now because I can do anything, literally anything. Some problem blows up, I'll figure it out. And pretty much can keep my cool, knock on wood, except for when I have like computer issues. But I learned that is the biggest thing that I got from the military.
Yeah. So that's kind of what we see on all the movies, which I'm sure the movies are wrong, or I mean, somewhat wrong. I don't know, but I've never been in the military, so I don't know. But I imagine like each leader like just yells at the person that like they're that's underneath them or whatever.
You're not wrong.
But that's a question that I've had is because I know in the military, depending on ranks, is like whatever, how long you've been in, all this other stuff I don't understand that you obviously do. But in the operating room, when you're providing your anesthesia, if there's, I guess my question is like, if there's scrub tech or somebody else that's like higher rank than you, what are the dynamics there? Because usually anesthesia is the head of the bed in charge doing whatever you got to do. So what's the dynamic there if you have to like command or whatever somebody who is a higher rank?
That's a good question, actually. So in the hospital, and so a lot of people, especially in the Air Force, so people make jokes and call it the chair force, but they're just a little jealous, in my opinion. I don't know, cut that out.
nope, it's staying in. No, I'm just kidding.
No, you can't. So there's like the military, and then there's like people kind of call it like a separate branch, the medical facility, the medical team. And it's like we have our own little shield. And at the end of the day, it's the patient that matters the most. And like, so if there was someone who outranked me, and I was still like, okay, 1, 2, 3, we need to, you know, move the patient up, or no, don't push that medication, or whatever it is for the patient. At the end of the day, like I would make that decision. But it's like, as soon as you step foot outside of that OR, like the ranking system kind of comes back into play. But as a CRNA, I pretty much outranked most people just because of when your job essentially and the years that they give you. So I was commissioned as a captain actually, and it's this whole thing. But I ended up outranking a lot of people that I worked with anyways, which was kind of weird. And I didn't really fall into the whole like yell at your, you know, the people who are lower ranking than you, which is also why I ran into a problem. I was just like, I don't communicate that way. So it was an interesting experience.
They wanted you to yell more.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. Like you can't be on a first name basis. And I'm like, that's my name. Don't answer to Captain Allen. Like people would be like, Captain Allen. I'm like, oh me.
Captain Allen.
Or like the saluting, like, ooh.
So I guess one of the things like I remember thinking about as, you know, I was doing nursing and I was like thinking about going like, oh, I heard about people doing the Air Force Reserves or whatever to, you know, advance their education, kind of like what you did, except you went full active duty. But I think one of the things that I thought about was just like, I guess I just didn't understand was like, okay, well, is there any point at which as a nurse or like a CRNA in the military, well, like, would you see any combat?
Absolutely. CRNAs, especially in the Air Force, are extremely deployable. One of my closest friends, especially in different military sites and bases, deploy more. But it, again, needs of the military, like, especially think about like right now what's going on in the world. There's so many people that I know just like, you have 2 weeks, you're deploying in 2 weeks and you have to go pack up your stuff and you're out. But CRNAs are highly deployable. And at any time I could have been deployed. I was technically deployed in place living in Japan, but nothing compared to the people who see combat in Africa, Iraq, or anything like that.
So what does their role look like in that kind of combat setting? Are they in a hospital? Or are they out in the, you know, with people in the field?
Yeah, so there's different lines. So you could be like extremely forward. You could be forward, like really close to combat. And then you could be all the way back, like in Germany, where they're flying people from combat. And then there's a place closer to the war where they're being stabilized. So you could also be stationed there. And then once they're stabilized, let's say they have to fly back to Germany and get treatment or Walter Reed, you could also be stationed at those facilities. I was at Nellis Air Force Base. And so we're not seeing a lot of people that were coming from directly from war, but different bases have different roles. And so it just depends, like wherever you are and wherever they send you, you support different missions around. So it really just depends. And there's still so much I don't understand, to be honest. I was only in there for 3 years, but you know, you end up learning a lot. But
before I went to anesthesia school, I went and talked to an Air Force recruiter, and my wife did not let me join for those reasons. I mean, I kept telling her, I was like, oh no, they're not like, I'm fine. I'm going to be in the hospital. I'm going to be far away from combat. And she's like, I don't care. You're not doing it. So it sounds like I could have been close.
You very much so. Yeah.
All right. Well, so let's pivot and talk about your real estate a little bit, because you've built up a nice portfolio. I mentioned earlier your job optional. It's just the dream. We're all working towards that.
Yeah.
So talk about your beginning stages in real estate.
So the first purchase I made was when I was in anesthesia school, actually. I had wanted to purchase right when I moved down to North Carolina. I'm from Virginia originally, but I didn't know where I wanted to buy. But I just had been exposed to a friend of mine who had purchased a home and was telling me their plans. And I just had this thought like, okay, I don't want to pay rent if I don't have to. Let me buy something. I had the choice to go to Virginia Commonwealth University or Duke. And I'm from Virginia, so I wanted to move a little bit away from my family, and then was looking up what was coming to Durham and just a lot of awesome plans. And I was like, okay, if I buy something here, hold on to it for a little bit. I'm sure that, and didn't understand really like that much, but I was like, okay, this is basic real estate. I'll hold on to it and then maybe I can sell it later on. So I bought in 2017 during my second year. Yeah, my second year of CRNA school in Durham, North Carolina. And then right when I graduated, or even a year later, values went up, but like of that house of 100K. And I was like, oh, wow. Okay. Let me research, like, what could I do with this increase in value? And at that time, I had met a mentor named Dr. Dante Flanagan, and he has been investing for years. He's another nurse anesthetist or nurse anesthesiologist, what are you supposed to say?
There you go.
Oh, you just made Josh's day.
Yeah, I definitely favor the new terminology. And
I'm with it. You know, let's do it.
Change is always uncomfortable.
It is, but I'm a person, I'm like, let's do it. Like, that looks uncomfortable. I'll go do the uncomfortable thing. So he had like millions of dollars. He's like, yeah, I buy here. I bought a bunch of these properties in New Orleans and I flipped this house. And I'm like, what? And so he literally pulled up his phone. And he showed me he was on, I think, his Navy Federal something, his app. And he was showing me his insurance. Like, he was like, yeah, I have insurance on this, this, this. And he was just swiping up through houses. And I was like, you own all of that? Like, how did you buy that? And he told me, he was like, I would use my HELOC. I use my self 401k, my SEP IRA. And I'm like, write down notes, da, 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 da. And just go bigger pockets, just go crazy while I'm in CRNA school, mind you. So should be studying, but I'm like over here starting a business, a UVA blue light glasses company, overlooking at real estate. And so I made a plan to like buy as much real estate as possible because he was pretty much done working at that time. And he was under 40. And I, at that point, I was like, okay, I want to be done working by the time I'm 40. I look at my parents still working by choice, most of it. But I was like, I don't want to do that. I want to live a really fun life and enjoy and not have to clock in forever and be like those nurses that I worked with on my first floor who were like hated their life and felt like they were at the basement, in the basement all day. And anyways, so that was my first. Durham was the first property. And then the second one was when I moved to Las Vegas and moved to the military. I wanted to buy specifically for Airbnb because Las Vegas is a travel destination. Of course, I didn't look up into the laws and what they were thinking of doing and trying to outlaw and forbid Airbnb rentals. But I am a legal Las Vegas Airbnb operator, proud to say. Jumped through all those hoops. So I bought that house in 2020, of course, right before the pandemic.
Of course.
So I was living in a tiny house on base, long story, but not even renovating. I bought turnkey and was going to put this on Airbnb, and then boom, nobody can travel. So that was fun. Floated that for a few months. People were still, after 6 months, people were still partying in Vegas. Surprise, surprise. And then started renting it out to nursing travelers. So then I figured out a nice little combo of short-term rentals and midterm rentals because Las Vegas, they don't have a lot of travel, people vacationing in Vegas over the summer or over the holidays. So I use, midterm rentals around the holidays for that one. And, so that's been fun. That was the second purchase. And then, I purchased another condo in Puerto Rico. When was that? That was 2022. I had vacationed in Rincon, Puerto Rico and absolutely loved it and put a little Zillow alert on my phone And boop, one popped up as I was leaving the military, and I was able to use my second investment purchase for that, and pretty much emptied my bank account for that purchase. But I make $5K a month off of that rental. It's a vacation rental. And so then that's my third personal purchase. And then recently just purchased 10 acres in Mebane, North Carolina, going to be making a homestead development. I took nursing investment funds for that. And we'll be paying them back interest monthly, and then refinancing, flipping, paying them all off. And then fifth purchase was what I'm in right now. Currently living in a live-in renovation situation. So fun. but homes here in Durham, as if you know anything about Durham, the return on this is going to be beautiful. So I'm sticking it out. So that's where I'm at on the purchases. I kind of touched over all of them.
Well, it sounds like you've done a little bit of everything.
I have.
Shiny object syndrome has not slowed you down at all.
No, I will not be slowed down.
I think my first thing that stuck up for me was just that the first one that you bought while you were in anesthesia school. So now, you know, I didn't go through anesthesia school, but my understanding is that most people aren't working, especially in that second year. Is that the year that people aren't working, the second year?
All of them.
Yeah. You're not supposed to, yeah.
So were you, working, and like, how did you qualify for a loan as a student? Were you working?
No, I was not working. My school made us sign documents saying we wouldn't work. I look back at it now and like, they couldn't not let me work. But anyways, I don't study law. I was not working. However, because I signed the HPSP loan forgiveness, I was getting $2,400 a month. And that was able to be counted as income. And so then I used my VA loan, because technically the moment you commission, you immediately have, I think it's like 3 months after, you have access to your VA loan. And so I was able to use those funds to purchase. I didn't have to pay a down payment. Small down payment, for the VA. And then, the house that I ended up buying in downtown Durham had, some purchase restrictions to combat gentrification. And so they had these income requirements where the buyer couldn't make over a certain amount of money. Mm. And since they don't count that benefit as from the military as income, it showed that I made no income technically. So I was able to purchase that house. I will always find a way. and so I was able to purchase that house because there was an income cap on it. And that it's like these trust stipulations. And so that trust stipulation ends in 2025, because you can't sell the home for market value until the end of 2025. So I'm counting down. I have a little windfall coming for me.
Did you know going into that deal that it was that type of thing? Is that what you were looking for?
I was not looking for that. I just found this house. And there's a lot of things that went on with that transaction, but you had to like write this letter and do this whole like program. And I'm just like, yeah, sure, whatever. Like, I can type something up with my eyes closed. And so I was just doing that, making sure I fulfilled all the qualifications. And then when I was thinking about it and like, okay, 2025, I can't sell till then. Cool. This will just be something that I hold onto. I'll make little adjustments here. I'll add a deck. I'll paint the cabinets. But for the most part, it was like in really, really good shape. And so all of those pieces kind of came into play after. It's kind of like, you know, when you invest in real estate, you kind of do it and figure it out as it goes. Well, at least it's worked out for me in the future or in the past.
That's been our journey the entire time. We do.
Okay, cool.
Me and Colin are very, very much optimistic about everything. Like, we can figure,
same.
Even if we make a mistake, we know that we'll at some point figure it out. And, so our connection is Colin married my sister, Jennifer, which is our the third partner of our.
I married Jen, not Jennifer. I've
okay, so that comes with all the time. So I knew her as Jennifer for like 22 years, and now all of a sudden, no, call me Jen. So I'm not going to. I will not.
Yeah,
that is such an interesting dynamic.
But anyway, so Jennifer is the one that's like, hey, maybe that's not a good idea. And me and Colin are like, we're doing it anyway. Help us figure it out. Yeah.
I get it. That's
yeah. Me. But it's worked out. Yeah. I mean, that's at some point you just got to do stuff, because if you wait long enough, you'll be ready for retirement and not have anything.
Exactly. That's my whole motto. Like I tell people that you do it now or you look up and 50 years have passed and you are in the same place.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And everybody at any moment is going to be preaching doom and gloom. I'm sure even in 2017, when you bought your first property, they're probably saying, hey, maybe wait a little bit. You never know what the market's going to do.
At every single step, 2017, you're in anesthesia school. You should wait. No.
yeah.
You're moved to Las Vegas, Airbnb, blah, blah, blah. It's expensive. Pandemic. No, buy it.
Right. For sure. And we bought our first property April of 2020. Like everybody was like, oh, the world's ending. And we're like, well, if it ends, then
I wish I bought more.
Yeah, same. That's what everybody always says.
For the Airbnb thing, this is actually something we were just talking about before the interview, because we're kind of in a similar situation with that Airbnb, where it's like, had a place, banking on the Airbnb, then find out you can't. And I heard Brandon Turner one time say, like, he doesn't buy short-term rentals unless they've already ruled on, like, in that specific area, ruled on the short-term rentals. So, like, did you kind of know going into it? Did you do any research going into it? And then how did you overcome that to actually get it legal in Las Vegas?
Yeah. So, of course, I had this brilliant idea. I'm in Las Vegas for what I thought was going to be the next 3 years, military. That's why I chose the Las Vegas area, because of real estate and that the Raiders were going to be moving there. So, I know.
Some A's too now.
Genius.
Yeah. Right. The Super Bowl, one rental, I've like triple covered my mortgage. So super excited about that. Anyways, so I was like, okay, let me just do Airbnb. This is going to be great. And then that year, January, I purchased in February. I started seeing like, oh no, you have to become like a bona fide business owner in Las Vegas, which is expensive in Nevada. You have to have a business license to operate. They treat you like a hotel. You pay 13% tax. You have to be inspected by the fire department. Long list of stuff you have to do. You have to tell them, like, a lot of it is literally just hoop jumping. And you have to like fill out this form every month and submit it in person. And so a lot of people were grandfathered in, but a lot of people were not. And a lot of people were not willing to jump through the hoops. And so I'll jump through the hoops. It's just, I don't care. I look at the dollars and it's worth it. It's worth the startup energy and cost. And so I just pay them their tax and call it a day.
Wow.
Yeah, we're still killing it.
It worked out. And, you know, like I said, Beyonce toured there. So many people play shows there. Raiders.
They just had Formula One recently. Like I think back in November.
Exactly.
And I think the hotels did like some crazy thing where it was like $2,000 a night with like a minimum like 4-night stay. So I'm sure you saw an influx there with Airbnb.
Oh yeah. And so I used to do literally everything for that Airbnb. I've slowly phased out and have hired people to manage it. So someone else does my pricing. I wish I was doing my pricing at that time because I would made bank, but they, you know, I guess there's checks and balances for a reason.
Yeah, that's something I missed in your intro. You mentioned Beyonce loving.
I am a Beyonce lover. I know a lot of people have their thoughts.
Who doesn't love Beyonce?
Right, come on.
I will say I'm like, I went to the Beyonce Jay-Z something tour. Like, I don't know, this was like 10 years ago or something like that. It was incredible. I just kind of got dragged along and I was just like, I don't know, I don't want to go to this. And I was like, oh my goodness. Like, I was like, you know, out there just.
Great. Yeah. Love it.
All right. So you do some flipping, house flipping as well, right?
Just started. That's new. working on doing a little bit more.
Just started. Have you completed you've completed a few though, right?
Yes.
Do you want to tell us about that journey and some of the hurdles that you've encountered?
Contractors.
Agree.
Oh, my goodness. So the most recent one was doing the flip in Puerto Rico, managing one from, actually when I bought it, it was in Japan. And so I was managing a flip from Japan. And just like figuring out how I could manage it and not be there. So like asking people to send me video every day. I don't recommend. But I will say what I learned and what I will probably take with me, is how, as especially as a woman, a lot of people don't take me seriously. I don't know if Jennifer,
thank you for that.
I don't know if she has found that, but that has just been my experience is, I can say something and then I call my partner and I'm like, hey, Justin, can you literally go say the exact same thing and it'll be done. No question. I'm getting over it. It actually means less work for me, but it used to really, really frustrate me. But I've gotten better at my communication. So that's something that I learned, is being like, no, I want this done, period.
That's right.
I don't send a bunch of exclamation points like, oh, I'm so excited to get this renovation done. That's a woman thing. You guys probably are like, yeah, whatever. materials are way cheaper in Puerto Rico and the cost of work is way cheaper. I learned about finding a team and paying them well, treating them well, so that not only will your project be done on time, but you could also use them in the future going forward. But one of the hardest things, like I said, was just managing it from a different time zone, waking up to like in the middle of the night to manage issues, because I didn't have a team. And I look back on it now and I'm like, maybe I should have hired somebody. But you don't have funds all the time to be able to do that. So you get it done.
So in terms of dealing with contractors, one of the things that my brother did a couple flips in San Antonio and they had a contractor that essentially, you know, screwed them out of like $10,000. So I know Puerto Rico is like a territory of the United States, but what kind of protections do you have against that kind of thing in when you're investing out of the country?
I would probably have to find a local lawyer if I needed anything. I know that the protections that we have here on the mainland don't always apply over there. But like you said, it is a U.S. territory. So if I needed to litigate or someone had stolen something from me, I do have those avenues. But it is also like its own frontier. Like if you don't know anyone there, someone could walk away with your money or say they're going to complete a job and not do it, pretend or say that they can complete the scope of work and not do it, overcharge you for materials that, you know, they're holding on to after the end. So those things are all still definitely possible. But you still can like litigate and find a lawyer if you need to.
On that topic, I was just going to ask, like, was there anything you did to mitigate that risk? Or did you just kind of go with your gut and just say like, hey, good conversation. I trust this guy. He's not going to do me wrong.
Yeah. A lot of gut. And then also the person that I found to manage my property that I was going to use to manage my property for Airbnb and rentals. He also had a lot of people that he contacts and has, you know, for handyman work and patching walls and installations, fans and all of that. So I really relied on him as well. Once I found him, I didn't have him in the beginning. But once he became part of my team and he knew like, okay, when I finally told him, like, I'm definitely going to use you and pay you your 20% steep to manage my property in Puerto Rico. He really became like a member of my team. And so I would have him go and check daily on the projects and use his connections and who people he suggested. So that really, really helped. in the end.
Are you seeing any tax benefits from being in Puerto Rico? Because I know there's like no federal taxes and like a 4% flat tax. All right,
your face went up,
so you know it's you know what's coming. So what does that look like?
Yeah, absolutely. So that's one of those things when I told people, like, I want to invest in Puerto Rico, they're like, that's not a good idea. Like, why would you do that? I'm like, okay, like, I read enough to know about these tax laws. And if I move my business here, the incentives that Puerto Rico had put in place to get investors to move their businesses in town. And so this is why you hire a CPA, though, because I don't do that's not my ministry. But
yeah,
I had been reading, what is it? Chapter 26. I don't know, guys, too many numbers. But if you look up the chapter 26 law and the percentage rules, I am no longer on my business specifically. I am not taxed in the American tax system for that business. Because I moved my business there. I purchased a home there. I moved there out of the military. You do have to live there for half the year, so 6 months to the day. And they do count the day that you land and the day that you fly out as those days counting towards you living there. And so then you can get the tax benefit of not being taxed in America, like your normal tax bracket, like you would there. So you have to follow the rules. I cannot stress that enough. You have to follow the rules. Do not do legal stuff. I almost cussed. I did a good job. Do not do legal stuff. You need to document your plane tickets. You need to show when you leave and when you leave the country and enter the country. But if I were to be taxed in America, like America tax brackets, I'd be paying Uncle Sam crazy amounts of money between a CRNA income and Airbnb income. That'd be insane. So being taxed at 4% is a nice.
So you don't have to be there six consecutive months, right? It's just 6 months
throughout the year.
Like literally you could do every other day if you wanted to. You just have to be there six months and then you get taxed 4% off of everything, which I'm sure you're probably with if you're doing any type of depreciation with your properties, probably not even paying all of that.
So see, do you do taxes?
She's figured
people?
It out.
I did. I did.
So I'm on Zillow looking for properties in Puerto Rico right now.
Do it. West Side.
Does that apply to your like your all your active income through CRNA as well?
No. So I did separate them, especially when I did locums. So I just had its own LLC. But like for my, and then I have my own W-2 for my, this is not what this is about, but you know, you have your W-2 through your solo, your 1099 work. And so I'm my own W-2 there. And then I work another job that has a W-2 portion as well. So I use that income to be able to qualify for properties. But no, those are separate just to keep it clean.
Yeah. And as you said earlier, you really need a tax professional who really understands what they're doing.
Yeah.
We've run into that problem a lot. We're on our third CPA in the last year.
So I feel like this is the one.
Hopefully this is the one.
That's the other one. Contractors and CPAs. I finally found a CPA that's also a real estate investor, finally, but that has been like, I got tired of being like, hey, do I qualify for this? And I'm like, what is that? So, right.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So, go ahead, Colin.
I was going to say, yeah, like that's something, was it our business coach that told us that? Like, or I don't know, we've heard it multiple places, but essentially like you shouldn't be bringing the strategies to the CPA. They should be the ones that are like coming up with the strategies for you. And advising you, not the opposite. And we were finding that a lot. We would be like bringing stuff and they would either not know what it was or just be like, oh no, you can't do that. And then we'd find out later on that we could have done that. And it was just frustrating.
It's so frustrating. Like I brought up me renting the condo, my business renting the condo from me, my own business, obviously, but renting the condo in Puerto Rico for a week. And they were like, what is that? I don't know what that law is. And so fired.
But okay. So you're teaching all of this strategy to other nurses and healthcare professionals. So what sparked that journey and what does that look like for you?
Yeah, so I have a program, a membership called Ditch the Bedside, where I coach nurses, mentor them through the real, like leaving the bedside essentially, if they want to. Nurses really hated this concept when I came out with it. The comments are still there. I'm still a little salty, but it really started with me trying to help nurses. If you all remember, Colin, I don't know if you still remember, like you would show up to work and people were like, oh, I hate this so much, or like, I'm so tired. And I just felt such a disconnect and I didn't want to feel like that anymore. And I didn't want other nurses to feel like that anymore. And I realized a lot of us just suffered from a lack of education. And so I started creating a course called the Nurse Airbnb course when I like made $5,000 my first month with my Las Vegas, or second month with my Las Vegas Airbnb property. I was like, oh my God, like I need to tell somebody about this. And so I made this course, and then I taught it live at first, and then I, you know, packaged it up and started selling that on its own. And then over the last few years, I created a purchasing course where I teach you how to find real estate deals, how to purchase them if you don't have a lot of money, seller finance, knocker programs, you name it, deal structures, which renovations to do. I just talk about it all. And then have put a bunch of other courses in there. And so now I've kind of narrowed my focus to be able to coach more people. And so I just do monthly sessions where, you know, you have access to 5 courses, and then every month you can tune into me and I kind of act like your consultant. You ask me about a property here or what you would do there. And so that's what I'm doing now. I'm just really trying to get nurses closer to living as free as possible. Because we only have one go at this, and spending your time, you know, if you look at the clock and you're working a 12-hour shift, it really turns into 14 by the time you commute and give report and then go home. And that leaves you, a few hours for the rest of your day to spend with your family or go surfing. I don't know, whatever you want. So, it's been really, really important for me to just at least give the education.
Yeah, that's great. That aligns with everything we're trying to do also.
I see you guys.
How many nurses love their job?
Let's be real.
I mean, there's a few of them. Yeah, but
we've met a few.
Oh,
yeah,
really?
Yeah.
But
yeah.
like this many.
But the majority.
Like 5.
But the majority of them.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
And I'm like, let's just be real. Let's talk about it. We work, we trade time for money. This whole like nursing is a calling thing. Some people believe it. I am not one of them. That is not, again, not my ministry. I believe it's a job is job. And that doesn't mean you can't do your job the right way and care for people. But also let's be real. Would you rather be getting yelled at by patients and like them throwing poop at you? I don't know if that's happened to you guys, but it's happened to me.
yeah.
No, but it sounds like I'm missing out.
Yeah, exactly. Called it quits, deuces immediately. And I'm just like, let's actually like call it what it is. Nursing can suck sometimes and it's really stressful and really exhausting. And I just didn't want to go, like, I don't think we should be going through our lives feeling exhausted after work all the time.
So you said you're at the point now where you like work is optional essentially in terms of anesthesia.
Yeah.
So what is it that kind of keeps you going back?
I actually enjoy the job. I know, violin. there's something about giving people propofol and, you know, their eyes rolling back. I'm just kidding. I enjoy, it's like instant gratification. I'll just call it what it is. Like someone comes in, they need surgery. I directly contribute to them getting something fixed. Right now I work in pediatric dentistry and from Medicare patients. Is it Medicare or Medicaid?
I think Medicare is the older people.
Yeah. See? Yep. So I work, it's mostly Medicaid, special needs people. So I actually take a pay cut right now where I work. You don't yell at me, but hourly out here in North Carolina is so abysmal. It's like $150 an hour. Sorry, I know nurses will be like, that's amazing. But like as a CRNA, that's trash. But I am really, I feel good about the work that I do. And so I do that 2 days a week, my Wednesdays and Thursdays. And then I have what feels like Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, a 5 day like weekend, essentially. Not really. I'm also working on real estate, but it's like that's at least working for me fully.
I mean, that's the dream. Like, you want to do what you want to do. Who cares how much money you get paid? That's what gives you fulfillment, because clearly you enjoy what you're doing.
You make me feel better about that.
Not that you would do it for free, but like, essentially, like, yeah, that's what you love doing. Yeah. So why not?
I think one of the things, like, in looking through your bio, you were talking about being like plant-based medicine and like kind of a hippie and everything. And I kind of want to know how that ties into being so like getting so much fulfillment out of the propofol rollback or the eye rollback. Like, how do those two go together?
Yeah,
that's like I don't know.
Plant-based medicine and Western medicine.
Plant-based medicine and drugs.
So actually, I'll tell it here. Actually, I'm rolling out a podcast about it. So you can cut out what you want, keep what you don't. I was extremely stressed in the military. Even before that, as a nurse, really, really bad anxiety, suicidal ideations, the whole thing. And military pretty much almost like broke me, truly. And I was on antidepressants for like a year almost, and moved back home. Hated how I felt on antidepressants, and, you know, keeping the timeline where it is. I had had some challenges when I was in anesthesia school, I recorded a podcast episode, so I'll leave that there. Almost was kicked out of anesthesia school because of me using plant medicine to help with anxiety. And I never kind of got rid of that fear of using plant medicine to heal and to be present and to be a better practitioner. And so fast forward now to 2024, I realized that there are a lot of ways that I can help other nurses with plant medicine through all the different modalities that I have used to heal myself. And I want to expose more nurses to them in a safe way, because who better than a nurse anesthetist to do that? Like, my job literally is to administer amnesia medications, hypnotics, you know, the whole nine. And so that has been something that I am starting to explore, and hosting nurses on retreats and plant medicine hikes, just as another avenue. It's like, let's take care of ourselves financially, mentally, and emotionally. And so I'm finding this synergy now. I'm feeling a lot, because I am not required to work for an organization, full time, and I pretty much control my schedule. I've gotten to a place where I'm more comfortable saying, like, yeah, plant medicine, I love it, and it's helped me in this way. So I'm stepping out on the ledge here, still a little nervous, but I think it can help a lot of people.
Yeah. Well, and that's the beauty of also job optional, is because now it doesn't matter. Like, you can actually say what's on your heart. And that's something that I am not able to do yet. And
I get it.
Just you wait. No,
call me.
Yeah, I will. Yeah, for sure. Yeah. So we'll let you know. Hopefully in the next year or two, I'll be able to speak my
I'd love to.
Yeah.
Whatever the conversation is, I'm there. I was asked to speak at a wellness retreat in Savannah about like psychedelics and plant medication and the studies with psychedelics. And I'm super excited about actually being able to be like, yeah, sign me up. I'll be there.
So I'm still not quite sure how I feel about certain plant
medicines. I get it. Yeah.
So, but like at the same time, that actually, I just was at a conference just this past week, and I was talking with a really good friend of mine, and he's done like the whole plant integration, whatever you want to call it, stuff. And to me, I'm like, I don't know how I feel about that, but I give ketamine regularly. Like, what's the real difference?
Well,
ketamine's used, it's for depression, it's great for it.
PTSD, so like,
yeah,
so much, and like the studies that are coming out about it. And it's, I wholeheartedly believe in science and and the uses for Western medicine and how amazing it is and, you know, how it saves lives. And then there's also a part of me that, you know, like I said, has lived in Japan for 2 years. And I look around at these people who are hundreds of years old, or, and I look at, you know, traditional communities who use plant medicine and they live to be hundreds of years old and happy. And so I feel like I'm at the intersection of both of them. And then I read the studies and I'm like, okay, this was the result of this modality. Like, how can we deny that? And so my whole mission is to do it safely and for people to feel like they'll actually get something out of it. So that's my shtick.
Yeah,
yeah. That whole thing with like the military, I mean, you know, triggering these kinds of sentiments for you, you know, it's like, whether it's the military or your family or nursing, like the bedside and all that stuff, like this whole depression, anxiety thing is becoming a lot more common, or maybe people are just talking about it more now. But I, having not really gone through that and just hearing about people that are on these antidepressants, definitely feel like that is not the answer. I mean, maybe in certain situations, like,
I'm with you,
it can like get you like, you know, away from the edge, whatever, you know, whatever you want to call it. But it's like, yeah, like I think taking a more holistic approach is like the better long-term situation. But yeah, Western medicine, like, obviously has some really great stuff, like, you know, surgeries and, you know, all the stuff they're doing now, but it's a little too quick to prescribe those meds.
I agree with you. No, that's something when I was a cardiac surgery ICU nurse, I would be watching them just implant device after device in people. And then, you know, the pandemic, we won't even talk about it, but it
just, you can talk about it.
Not yet.
Well, no, Josh still needs his job. Don't talk about that.
Give me just like 2 more years, 1 or 2.
Yes. I love that. I feel like there's so many people and healthcare providers that actually share the same sentiment. We just are like, we don't want to share it because it's not safe to. So I get it. When you're ready to talk about it, just email me and I'm there.
Dr. Aisha Allen is going to come back on the show. Yeah. When, yeah, I'm job optional.
She's just going to talk trash about everything.
Everything. Trash. I cannot wait. Birth control. I'm just kidding.
Oops. But there is like just like all this stuff going on now with like cancer and infertility and all these different things. And it's like, I don't think it's just Western medicine, but I think it's just like Western culture and plastics, mm-hmm, and like all this stuff. And like, without going down like this like crazy rabbit hole and like George Soros and all the, like, it's like at what point does it all just like kind of become like, you know, but it's like, yeah, something's going on.
You can't have your eyes wide open and not see it. And yeah, my mouth has gotten me in trouble so many times, but this is just something that I can't like be quiet about. It's a lot, especially for women's health. I'm like I'm very vocal about women's health and the things that we have been sold and we consume and that literally are in like the lotions and fillers. I know, like, people like it, but like, it's, what are you putting in your face? What are you doing?
Well, I was just gonna, I know we're getting kind of close to the time limit, but we'll move on to our final five. We're gonna, 5 questions we ask everybody.
Ooh, I purposely didn't watch anything so that I could be surprised.
Oh, I like that.
Well, oh, you are about to be so surprised. No, this is just regular traditional questions. So, first question is, what's a top financial resource that you found? Where do you go to educate yourself on finances?
Bigger Pockets. Yeah. OG podcast. You can just listen to so many people's stories. So that.
It's great. We joke that Bigger Pockets, for those of you who don't know, is a wannabe investing RN podcast. So
I like that. You should start putting that publicly.
That'll be a quick way to get canceled.
Maybe.
Second one is, what advice would you give yourself as a new grad?
Buy a multi-unit with your W-2 immediately and live in one of the units. And then if you move away, you can put other nurses or nursing students in that same place.
So that's the first thing that I tell people too. And so many people are hesitant. They just can't wrap their mind around that.
I know. And I'm like, I wish somebody told me that.
It's got to be the easiest, the best, the whatever.
One loan, it's multiple door.
It's the way to go.
Yeah. And you can up to four units, you can get the FHA loan.
Yeah. I have a new grad cohort right now where I let new grads from CRNA school or nursing school split the cost of my like consultation fee. And I'm helping guide, my goal is to get them into some type of real estate purchase in a year. And so I'm like really pushing them to do something like that.
All right. Third question is, what is your big goal for the next 12 months?
To get started on the homestead development, the 10 acres out in Mebane, start getting the permits ready for that. I am, just like we were talking about, I'm ready to live a little bit more of a hippie life. I had chickens in the middle of the city. Get solar. I want solar out on the property and start getting those houses up to sell. So that's the big year plan.
My wife is going to love this episode. So Nicole, when you listen to this, because she's wanted chickens for the longest time. And I'm like, I don't know. We're like in the city.
Super easy. I did it in the city. I did.
We're not going to air this episode now. Sorry, Nicole.
They're easy as long as you keep them in a coop, they're easy. But I had chickens growing up and they roamed in our backyard and they poop everywhere. And they're mean. Like they would chase us and peck us.
Ours were eaten by raccoons also. So there's, circle of life.
Yeah.
So are you with that homestead? Are you, is that just for you? Or are you going to be?
No, I want more people, like-minded individuals. I feel like a big thing that's missing in current times is community. We are all living really separate lives. And that also, I think, contributes to stress. Back in the day, we lived really communally where, you know, one family might be cooking dinner for the day and they go hunt. And, you know, I'm not, whatever you believe, I don't believe we need to go back to like hunting, whatever, every day. But I just feel like we could use some more community. And so I want to have a hand in creating that.
Well, and after the last 20 minutes of conversation, we know what that homestead's going to
look
like.
Yeah, I was going to say, where's the bunker going to be on that homestead?
Oh, more expensive.
You already looked into it.
I was in the military.
That's right. number four, if you were to tell people to do one thing other than like, you know, bunker or like, you know, whatever else, like what would that one thing be? More financial sided thing.
I think first have your savings. So literally calculate what you need to survive for 3 to 6 months. Or if you are a person who needs to stash a little bit more for a year, stash that savings and what you could live on if all hell broke loose, and then take risks with the rest of it. Yeah. I think doing things throughout with the fear involved and do the things, buy the property, invest in your 401k if that's your thing. But yeah, save up some money, have your little nest egg, and then sky's the limit.
All right. Number five is, what's the biggest financial mistake that you've made and how are you going to avoid it again?
Ooh, biggest financial mistake. Okay. This was in purchasing a house property. We were in negotiations and for a very, very long time, I would say like 5 months. And there was some handshaking. We had met multiple times. We were using a hard money loan or situation at the time. And the seller was like, okay, well, for us to continue, like, I think it was the company that we used. Anyways, the seller was like, okay, well, if we were going to remain in this deal, we want you to put $30,000 more for your down payment. And we were so confident in our financial position. We were like, okay, yeah, sure. Like, this is just going to go towards the payment. And this hard money lender, I don't know if they just didn't know what they were doing or if they lied about where they were in the grand scheme of things. But they couldn't close the deal. And we lost that $30,000 plus, I think we had 40K already in like for down payment. So 70K of our hard-earned money. I'm pretty sure we could have sued about it, because the way that they acted after it was like really apologetic, and people's mannerisms and how they act. But it was a lesson learned for sure. So we'll never do that again.
Wow. So what are you going to do now? Like if that situation came up again, how would you avoid it?
Right now I'm a little butthurt about hard money lenders. So I don't even think I will do that anymore. And I'm sticking to raising funds with nurses and family and friends, and paying the 10% interest on their funds and investing that way. But if someone were to say like, "Hey, put more money down," I'm not doing it. I'd walk before that.
I know that's something I saw you put on your socials, your Instagram or whatever. And we didn't really get into it a whole lot here, but how can nurses and you have nurses invest with you and to buy property. So what does that look like? Like if I was to invest some money with you?
Yeah. So I offer, if you were to go into a syndication deal, they'd probably want like 50K to 100K to purchase some apartment complex. So I wanted to lower the barrier to entry for nurses. And so I have them basically loan me money. So I turn them into private money lenders, and they loan me the money. I invest in the real estate, flip, sell, refi, whatever it is. And then after the loan term ends, I pay them back their full principal. And while I am holding their money, I'm paying them interest. So I treat them like a bank. And it's a way that people can earn interest. I also let people see the behind the scenes process. So I record videos and I upload them and share like what I'm doing with the money, just so that they can also learn as well.
I think one of the cool things about that story, like obviously it's not cool that you lost $70,000 or however much your portion was.
Yeah.
But the fact that you were able to lose that much money and still be okay, because I think that's like what scares a lot of people off. It's like, oh my goodness, what would happen if I lost $70,000? Well, in a few years, you'll be job optional and you'll be doing pretty well. So it's like, as long as you learn from it.
You have to learn from it. And I think I say this thing, we all have like money wounds and money traumas, not to be dramatic, but like we grow up watching our grandparents, our parents struggle or succeed with money and lose money. And so we have these like, I feel like our generation likes to hold on to money and keep it in our savings accounts, where technically we're losing money if it's sitting in these bank savings accounts. And so I that was a big one where I had to like woosah and breathe and be like, no, money is cyclical. I'm going to stay the course. And I'll come out on top. So.
Well, and once you see the power that real estate really has, you realize that $70,000 in the grand scheme of things is not that much, because there's so much more money to be made in real estate.
But you have to be in those positions to even see it like that. So yeah, good point.
Well, so if people want to call the doctor, how do they get a hold of you?
You guys know that Drake song?
Yeah. Of course.
Drake. The cell phone? Oh, yeah.
No, this is the first time I've sang on the podcast.
So.
That's all I got.
So if you want to reach me, I think the best place is on Instagram or via email. On Instagram, I'm Aisha, A-I-S-H-A underscore C-R-N-A. So Aisha underscore C-R-N-A. Or send me an email at hello@aishaallen.com.
Cool.
And you can reach me there and I can send you links and all the stuff.
And you're on all platforms, right? I know we connected on Instagram, but
I have a TikTok that I kind of abandoned, but there's a lot of good content on there. YouTube, a lot of CRNA content on YouTube, vlogs and interview advice. And
thank you so much for your time, for coming on here and sharing all your advice.
Thanks for having me. It's been a blast. You guys are fun.
This is a great one. Yeah, thank you. Thanks. That's a huge compliment. So, all right. Catch on the next one.
Thank you for tuning in to another episode of Investing RN.
Don't forget to like and subscribe to the podcast and leave a review if you enjoyed today's episode.
Be sure to share this episode with one other person and follow us on Instagram at investingrn.co if you have any other questions or topics you'd like us to cover in future episodes. Your input is super valuable and we love hearing from our listeners.
Until next time, remember, your financial well-being is a journey and we're here to guide you every step of the way. Keep investing in yourself and your future.